Welcome back to the Mawa Missing Show. I'm Shirley Nardrum.
And I'm Sharon Nardrum.
And today we're off to Bemidji to visit with Mike Stitsworth about this cool new project he's got going on up there with beef, local beef.
Recently we were reading a paper and we saw that you were doing something unique and cool with local farmers and beef producers.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to... A lot of the reservations are working on, you know, food access and food security issues, and the local food movement is coming in big into that. And so really like to catch the story of, you know, what it is you're doing with local farmers.
Well, we're basically, you know, today the way all meat is brought to anybody that's buying it from, you know, any kind of business or any kind of food service, it's got to go through a USDA inspected facility.
Right.
So it's really tough to get locally produced meat from somebody you know, because by the time these farmers are shipping it to the sales barn, then it gets shipped to the feed lots, and then they put about 300 pounds on that animal at the feed lots, then it gets shipped over to a slaughter plant. And it goes through a slaughter plant, it goes to a packing plant, you know, like a wholesale distributor. And then sometimes, even if you're a food service, like you'd see at like schools, restaurants, casinos, anything like that, they're getting it through a food service.
Right.
So that's another middleman. You lost the origin of that animal. And, you know, just like wild game hunting, if you shoot a deer and you have to track it for a long ways, the adrenaline in that deer kind of makes the meat not taste as good.
Right.
It's the same thing with cattle and hogs and everything else.
Yeah.
You can take that animal before it's ever left its home area, you know, its home farm. You don't have that adrenaline buildup. And, you know, a lot of times these animals lose 10% of their body weight on just the drive down to the feedlot. So 1,500.
There's a lot of stress on that.
It's a lot of stress. So adrenaline builds up lactic acid in the muscle, and that burns the marbling out of the muscle, and it also makes that muscle tissue more tense, so it's a tougher meat than if you don't have that. Just like a deer, you know, or elk or whatever, if you take that animal and it doesn't know what's happening, it doesn't have any of that chemical reaction in its muscle. So, you know, I was kind of striving, you know, for something that, you know, take all the middlemen out, the people that are on the phones making the money, and let the people that are raising the animals and doing all the work to the animals after that, let them make the money off it. And then also, I was trying to get better quality. Kind of always bothered me that we could have a little control by having a good broker that would buy from certain slaughter plants and give us upper hand that way. But really, you're kind of getting the same thing everybody else is getting. It's all the same system. So I always had a problem with that, and I came up with a unit that we can go to the farm with that has all the requirements that the federal government needs for food safety and humane handling of these animals to comply with all the government regulation to be able to buy our animals straight from the farms. So basically, we're buying the animal from the guy who's raising it. We are doing all the work to it and selling it direct to the customer.
That is awesome.
So your farmers...
They make about 20%
more. 20%
more.
Yep. Well, that's a lot.
We're paying a market value, you know.
Uh-huh.
Don't get me wrong. We're paying a fair market value. But when they don't have the transportation costs involved and they don't have the weight loss involved and all the brokerage fees from the person that's lining up the sale for them, they make about 20% more profit just because they're taking out the middlemen on their end, too.
They must be pretty excited about
this. Yep, yep.
So I have a question then. You said that the feedlots, they put on like 300 pounds on them. So then do these farmers have to keep their cattle longer?
They keep their, yes.
They keep them longer to build up
right.
that.
Right. So there's a transaction right there. So the farmer is selling it through a sales barn. There's a broker, and he gets a fee. You know, so they're taking some of the profit out of that. The actual economic impact might be greater than 20%, but
I'm thinking it would be.
Yeah, because you're not, because usually what they do is they calf out and then they get it up to about 500-600 pounds, then they sell it to a guy, they sell it through a sales barn, and there's a brokerage fee there, and then that person would take it from 500 to about 800-900 pounds, and then they sell it through a broker again, and then it goes to a feedlot. So there's trailering costs. Like to take a load of cattle from here to probably the most typical place would be around Council Bluffs, Iowa, Omaha, you know, somewhere in there. That's kind of your common area it's going to go to. It's about $2,000 or $2,000 to $2,500 to send about 30 to 35 cows.
Wow.
So they don't have any of that because we're going to them. You know, like when you have these slaughter plants that are doing 2 to 3,000 head a day, you're running everything through one spot, so you're creating a lot of waste in one location. When we go to individual farms, they take that, you know, they call it offal, the waste, you know.
Uh-huh.
They take that, they roll out hay bales, they put the waste in there, roll it back up, compost it, spread it out on their fields. You know, predators and everything else take care of everything. So you're not creating an environmental issue when you're creating a whole bunch of waste in one spot. So the carbon footprint of taking out probably 5 modes of transportation out of the process, creating all that waste in one spot. And a lot of these feedlots have 25,000 to 100,000 head of cattle in one spot. It's just taking things back to the source. You know, you're completing the process at the source of where the animal originated.
So are you one of the first or the first to be doing something like this?
We're not the very first to do one part of the operation, but we're the first ones to put it all together and be able to provide every product available, after you take that animal. So we'll federally inspect all the meat. The building we're building up in Turtle River is going to have a federal smokehouse, so there won't be any waste. So we have a means to sell every part of that animal.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So how big of an area are you planning on being able to service?
Well, this building will service a 50-mile radius. You know, in the future, well, actually one thing that we're talking about right now is basically institutions, you know, like schools and, mm-hmm. and hospitals and, you know, a lot of institutions. There's a big farm to school
yep.
initiative.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And they've never thought about getting meat that way because it was never an option before. So now we're actually a good chance we're going to be providing the meat for the schools in this area.
Oh, that would be so cool.
And, you know, before it was just vegetables was the only option that you could do the school at the farm to school. Now you can do meat and everything. So anyway, we may, if this goes as planned, we may take, you could build a whole vertically integrated business that takes care of the egg community, the meat supply for that community, all in one, and start putting in strategic areas. So
I'm guessing this was no small venture. You know, you're putting
no,
I'm sure you got some money invested in this and done some
all
planning. What do you think, how long do you think it's going to take you to turn around so that you start having profit? Do you have a projection for that?
You know, cash flow wise, positive cash flow wise, it won't take long because with meat, everything has to be sold within a month. So
Right. You're
buying and selling everything every couple weeks, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't take as long to have a positive cash flow. But, you know, it'll take a few years to, you know, outrun the main investment. So
yeah, I'm guessing you're going to do very well.
Hope so.
And you know, like if you did well, would you look at other market areas?
Yeah.
And then
yep.
just build out.
Yeah. That was going to be my question, but it was like, how many farmers have contacted you about doing it this way?
After the news got out that we're going to do this, I bet you within 50 miles, 200 or so.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, they're making a lot more money, and we told them. We had like a town hall type of meeting up in Black Duck. Black Duck BDA helped us put it on, and they sent invites to 60 farms that are within 30 miles of Black Duck, and we were hoping to get like 15 to 20 farms that come in, and we ended up with 80. So they all understood it immediately. They understood all the benefits to this. You know, you're taking out all the people that are involved with the current process that have nothing to do with the production of it.
Well, I like the fact that now it's really local.
It really is local. We can tell you.
You've got locally grown, locally harvested, locally sold, meat.
Yeah.
And our farmers and are making more money, so that's better for our local economy.
And then if everybody takes the money they're currently spending on meat today and they spend it locally, how many times does the same dollar bill get spent?
Exactly.
8 times over? With all the schools and restaurants and everything else, if there's $10 million spent a year in the Bemidji area,
yeah,
and you can multiply that by 8, that turns into $80 million for the community, because that same dollar, you spend it with one person that's local, that person spends it with another person that's local, and it keeps on turning over and over and over. So, it's a economic means that's never been available to the local farmer. So
I'm guessing, since how you're a Stitsworth, Mike Stitsworth, you must have grew up in this business.
Yeah.
Is like, how did you come upon this idea? Is this something you've always thought about, or conversations with farmers?
Farmers have always wanted this. You know, they've always were trying to figure out how to get their meat in our store and everything else. And we're like, we legally can't sell your meat unless it's inspected. Mm-hmm. Well, the only inspected slaughter is, you know, in plants, big plants, and they lose they can't track the origin. Once they get into a feedlot with 100,000 head of cattle,
no, there's no way.
You can't track them anymore. You know, we actually, I don't remember what the statistic is on the amount of beef raised in the U.S. that Minnesota raises, but of all the beef that Minnesota raises, they only get 5% of that back.
Wow.
Really?
Yep. So, you know, all the meat that you see in all the places, we may raise a lot more than 5% of the country's meat, but we only get 5% of the stuff that our farmers are raising back to us, because it's getting distributed nationally. You know?
Right.
California could be getting all our beef.
Yeah. And we'll be doing pork, and we can also do, if it's a controlled environment like a deer farm, we can do whitetail, we can do elk, we can do bison.
Yeah.
Everything that we run through our trailer with an inspector. He inspects it, and then it's safe to eat for the public. We can sell it to the public. So
is it like a trailer? Like,
it's a lot more elaborate than this. Is just what we use for wild game.
Okay.
Yep.
But it is basically
a semi-trailer.
A semi-trailer.
And it's got everything you need for your USDA requirement in it.
Awesome.
It's got its own power supply. It's got its own water supply. It's got its own heat. I mean, it's got 4 12,000-pound winches in the ceiling. It's got a hide puller to take the hides off.
That was my question. What is going to happen with all the hides?
You know, right now we're not going to count that in our business model as revenue. Hides are really down because of all the synthetics that are out there. Uh-huh. The market for leather isn't as high as it used to be.
Really?
I think they said, I just heard a statistic on Tuesday. I was in a class, and they said hides were up to about $50 a hide on a cow, right? Now they're down to like $9.50.
Holy cow.
So if you were to take and save that hide, keep it in barrels, and store it, but we had to store it refrigerated until somebody could come pick it up, it's worth more to us to have that space than it is to get to $9.50.
For the hide.
So the, you know, nature will have that
hide. Nature will have the hide, right?
Yep. At this point.
If somebody wanted to contact you and you were going to be going out and...
Yeah, that would be...
They could come and purchase the hide from you before you tossed it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Because, you know, there's a lot of people that make drums and things like that I'm thinking that
you know,
possibly...
I was talking to somebody... We do a lot of deer for people up in Red Lake. I was telling them, I was like, hey, you know, you guys can get things going way quicker on a reservation than anybody else could, like, here. Somebody should start a tannery.
I was sitting at the dog park talking to my friend who's a drum maker, and we were just talking about this, like...
We're kind of at the... We sell our deer hides to a guy that comes up from Wisconsin. And, you know, we just get whatever he gives us, you know, we don't really... You know,
you'd be really losing some money.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Sometimes you... It all depends on the market. A lot of times Russia dictates the market, you know, because, you know, whatever they're buying, you know, whatever the worldwide need is on leather, you know. And sometimes you get $10 a hide for deer, which is really kind of on the high end right now. And sometimes you get $5-6 a hide.
Wow.
You know, so for deer. You know, like I said, beef goes anywhere from you can fluctuate from $9 to $50, you know. And, you know, the same thing, you know, we could probably get a little bit more money to make it feasible for us to save them.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody local is doing it.
Is doing it, yeah.
Because, there again, you're taking out a lot of middlemen.
Yep.
So hopefully somebody listening to the show says, hey, there's a niche for me, and starts exploring that.
Yep.
That possibility.
So, yeah, so right now we're working with, we're talking with the Bemidji School District about supplying them with the meat products, and hopefully eventually we'll convert their whole intake of meat products with local meat, you know, we'll convert them over, and we're going to start working on all the surrounding areas, supplying them with local meat. And the more we do that, you know, like you say, you can turn a dollar 8 times, so.
Yeah.
You know, economically wise, you could take every dollar you're spending and turn it over eightfold. So
if you had beef producers in there, are they pretty much all just wild graze, like grass fed, or is
no
it, are they fed corn? And
most of them are grass fed up until the last 3 months,
and then they put the weight on them with the
corn. Yep. The corn. It's easier, you know, like for grass fed is a good idea, or it sounds like a good idea, but actually it takes more land to graze grass fed.
Uh-huh.
So environmentally it's not what you think it is, you know, because you're having to use more land to raise it, and it also takes a lot more time
to put the weight on
because they're not getting the protein that they need. And on a, you know, talking as my, you know, as a retail meat market owner, the consistency, I want to be able to sell you the same, pretty close to the same thing as I can all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you buy a steak here, one time you get it good, the next time you don't, and you're going to remember the time you don't, and the time it's not.
Yeah, right.
And it could be one time out of 20, you know.
Yep.
But you're going to, oh, their steaks aren't as good as they used to be, and that's, and you'll leave it at that, and you won't come back, you know. So
and
I need
you
to
tell a friend, and they tell a friend.
Yep. So soon. You need to be as consistent as possible. And when you get grass fed, it's, you know, the fluctuations are more. If you do a lot of research, grass fed is leaner. You know, there's not as much fat in it. But really, if you talk about nutrients, you know, what kind of nutrients come in a cow? The nutrients is the same in a grass fed cow and a corn fed cow. You're just talking about fat content is all.
I was just curious because I was visiting with some folks down around Brainerd area that are, there's like about a handful of, you know, grass-fed, no antibiotics, that kind of farming going on down there. That was one of their issues, was that they didn't have a place to, you know, slaughter the cattle that gets all put in the same place unless they do it themselves.
Right.
And they were like wishing for, you know, something like what you're doing.
Yeah, we can do good. Well, basically, whatever our customers want is what we do, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just kind of how it works, you know. Customer's always right, you know. You know, so if they want to buy that, that's what we'll do, you know. But for a grass-fed cattle raiser, they have to. So you're buying a, you know, the grade of meat kind of goes off of marbling, you know, how much marbling's in the meat. And that's how you pay. Well, grass-fed meat it's graded lower. So you pay on that scale, but they need more money because they've raised that cow for another year than over everybody else, so it's cost them more, and it's taken them twice as much land to raise the cow. They're gonna need almost, I don't know, I'd have to say 30-40% more to make it feasible. Well, problem is, you know, it makes people feel good that the cow was raised that way or whatever. But the problem is it's hard for me to buy it because it's actually graded lower, and you can't charge more for it because it's a lower grade. So that's where
you're between a rock and a hard place on that one.
You kind of are. So that's why it's always tough, because these, you know, these grass-fed farmers want to raise grass-fed, which is fine, but the market doesn't make it easy to do it.
Right.
You know.
So what if you have a farmer, I was just thinking, circling back around to the hide thing, I don't know if we have any, I think we do have some bison farms?
Yeah, we have a bison farm lined up.
At least one.
We got a couple, yep.
So those people, if they're, like, their hides, then that's just their deal to take care of that hide, right? Then
we can line that up. We line that up.
Because
we technically own the hide.
Oh, okay.
But we're not capturing any of that because until we have an outlet for it, you know, say a local person had a tannery, then it'd be different. You know, right now the only place that would probably pick that up is out of Long Prairie, and they're only paying $10 a hide, and you gotta hold on to that hide till they come up.
Right.
Well, I don't want to waste the cooler space for that I need for meat to hold all these hides that you're only getting $10 a hide for. So that's where, you know.
Another rock in a hard place.
That's the business decision on that end of things.
Right.
It's feasible for a big giant plant to do that because usually they have the space and they have somebody coming daily to pick everything up. But you know, right now I'm just counting it all as waste. It's just part of the business. So.
Yeah. So this store that we're standing out in front of, this is probably just the place where you...
It's our retail outlet.
It's your retail outlet. You have another place where you...
Up in Turtle River.
That's in Turtle River.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So this place is where all our retail will happen. And we currently get meat in, you know, in loins and stuff like that, you know.
Uh-huh.
And we cut it from there. Instead of getting our stuff from plants in the central part of the U.S., we're going to get it from Turtle River in the same fashion. So this business model stays exactly the same. We're just changing our supplier from there to up there.
Right.
Our own, we're supplying ourselves, you know.
So how long have you been here? Weren't you over in Nary for a while?
Nymore.
Not Nary.
Nymore. Another in town. That's, you know, I grew up in that one, you know, and went in the Air Force, college, had a job as an engineer, and I wanted to move back to Bemidji, and there's no engineering jobs available, so talked my dad into selling me the business, and actually opened up this smaller store a year after I bought the store.
Well, that's when I thought you were over there.
Yep, we were in there at first, and we outgrew that right away. So then I started looking for a new location that was bigger after about 3 years, and this place, the people that were renting this, moved out. And I talked to the landlord of this place, and he sold it to me. I got him to sell it. So then I moved across the street, you know, which worked out really well. It was nice and close.
An easy move.
Yeah, so seems like about every 2 years I'm building something, you know.
So I was trying to read your cap there. You've been around since...
It's been in Stitzwer's name since 93.
Okay.
But actually the meat company started in the original location in 1889.
That's what I thought. You guys had been around since
1889
forever.
Yep. My dad went to college for it back in the late 70s, you know, so we pretty involved with the meat business. My great grandpa had a meat shop in Ankeny, Iowa in the early 1900s. So
very cool.
Yep.
Keeping it in the family. Got any sons coming up?
Yeah, I got a son and a daughter, and so far, he's a second grader. Every year, he says, "I'm going to work at the meat market." What are you going to do when you grow up? Work at the meat market. So, I don't try to push anything on him, but he likes coming in here, so he has a good time with it. Actually, you know, when I was in the Air Force, all my friends I made in the Air Force are like, "Hey, you worked in a meat market. How'd you like that?" And I'm, you know, you think about it for a little. Actually, I didn't mind it. It's a good job. You know, it's kind of fun.
I lived in International Falls, and I worked at a little corner grocery store.
Sure.
Luca's Grocery, and we did meat processing.
Sure.
And yeah, I was supposed to be the cashier up front, and I kept working my way back to the meat department.
We have two IFAL guys working here.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
And I loved it. I thought it was great. I learned how, you know, I learned how to do some cuts and stuff. And it was really...
Really, when it doesn't sound appealing if you're not in it. But once you learn it, it's kind of a fun job.
Yeah. The only thing I didn't like was when we got lupa skin.
I don't like that either.
My only association with meats is my mom and dad would always buy a half a beef from the neighbors. And every fall, I remember getting the, you know, the wax paper and the tape, and they always would clean off the table and pull out this diagram of a cow, mm-hmm. and then they'd argue about the cuts, like, you know, like, you just did that wrong, and it was like this whole thing, like, every fall. I was,
oh, yeah.
Yep. Like, didn't you guys get this down last year?
I always see people standing in front of the meat case, and that's a ribeye. That's a New York. I can hear the friends arguing each other all the time. And I'll say, oh, that's a ribeye. You
know? So do you have local businesses that do buy their meat solely from you?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, actually, most of the locally owned bars and restaurants, they get all their ground beef from us fresh every day. We grind it every single morning and run it all over town in that refrigerated van.
Really?
Probably within a 30-mile radius. You know, we go down to Bisida and all the way up to Turtle River and all around. And then we have some other restaurants that come up from Walker and get their own, and, you know.
Yeah, that's so cool. I guess I didn't realize that was going on.
Yeah. So most of the locally owned and operated places are getting fresh ground from us. Because we grind it right into the bag. Like, that meat is 15 minutes old when you get it, you know.
That's why some of those burgers are so good.
Yeah. Well, you leave Bemidji, or you leave this area, and you go eat at restaurants, like, in other cities, and you're like, food's better in Bemidji. You know? Yeah, yeah. But, so, a lot of them, though, they'll get, you know, if they have steak, meat, and everything else, well, they get it off their truck because it's just loins, you know, kind of. Not a lot different than we're getting it, other than our big advantage is we have a really good relationship with a broker that cherry picks for us, so he knows where to get everything, you know, all the good plants and everywhere you know, the good places to get everything. So that was our niche, how we ended up with better meat most of the time for the money.
Mm-hmm.
And but it always kind of bothered me, like I said before, that pretty much getting our stuff all at the same place, you know, and it's nothing special about it, because no, I don't know anybody. I don't know who raised it or anything else. So really, it's nothing special. So that's why it took me 5 years to get this USDA certification for all this. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, that wasn't easy, was it?
No, So I've been working on it the whole time I've had the meat market for my dad.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, a lot of them are saying, you know, once you start getting your meat direct off the farm, we're going to switch over on everything. That'll be a big deal for us, too.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
How long have you been in the specialty meat? You do a lot of smoking and...
Oh, always. We've always...
Have you always done
that? Yeah. Yeah. I've gotten into it more, I think, since I've owned it.
Yeah.
We've gotten a couple of really good smokers. You know, they're really expensive, but, you know, in my previous job, I was a manufacturing engineer for Bobcat, and they taught me how to buy pieces of equipment that had good return on investment.
Uh-huh.
So I just applied the same thing. And I'm like, well, this smoker, it'll increase profits, you know, this way, that way, another. It should pay for itself in the first year, whatever. So it's really driven consistency and a really high quality product, you know. Before, it was such a manual process that you could mess up a batch of meat here, you know, pretty frequently. So we've been able to increase our homemade product sales, you know, a lot because of that, you know. Yeah, we've done a lot more smoke product than
and you've branded people. Yourself really well. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. even just looking in the shop, you got the t-shirts and you got the so that brand is, I can see why you want to make sure that what you're selling out there is
we've even told people, like, hey, if you're selling our stuff, that's fine. I'm not, you know, if whether you go with us or not, it's fine, but if you're advertising that you're selling our stuff and you go away from us at any, you know, any period of time in between,
right.
I don't want people thinking that they're eating stuff from our place and it doesn't taste good.
Right.
Just because you happen to buy something that was cheaper that week. Either buy it from us or not, or if you do buy it from us but you think you're going to switch on and off, don't advertise you're getting it from us.
Yeah.
You know, don't tell people you're getting it from us if it's not ours.
Right.
We don't want to get that out there, so you got to protect your name.
Yep, you do.
Your name is the only thing you have.
Right.
That's what my dad used to tell me.
Yep. Yep. So,
live your life right. Do business right.
Yep. We're the only people that you can buy local meat from legally in the whole northern part of the state. Well, actually, in most parts of the country. You know,
really?
A lot of places that advertise it, you know, like you see these restaurants, you know, it's locally raised. Well, actually what it is, no, they're not going out to get the animal themselves like we are. They have a packing plant that's within a few miles of them or something.
Uh-huh.
But that packing plant's getting their stuff from a feedlot anyway.
So, right.
It's not, the packing, maybe one part of that process is local, but it isn't local like we're getting it, you know.
Right.
So I think once we get rolling and we're able to switch ourselves off of getting stuff from down south, it's going to take a little bit, you know. But once we can totally wean ourselves off, we will put on our advertising. If you're at a restaurant or you're anywhere or you're buying meat somewhere, if it's not Stitsworth, it's not local because
yeah,
it isn't, you know. It's me hard to beat, you know. So
it will be. I'm excited for you. Well. So. Thank you so much for taking the time to visit with us about what you're doing. I'm very excited for you.
All right.
I'm wishing you all the best.
Thank you.
Yes.
And I'm happy for our local farmers. It's awesome.
Miigwech. Yeah.
This program has been funded by the Legacy Arts, Culture, and Heritage Fund of Minnesota.